We're beginning to look at a new book within the Bible. Not a new book, a completely new book, that'd be weird. It's within the Bible. But it's a new letter within the Bible written by a guy called James. And one of the characteristics of this book is that it doesn't follow straight lines. It's a bit unusual. A lot of the letters in the Bible are written by a guy called Paul. And he follows a very set structure of, you know, kind of straight lines and logical arguments and going from A to B in a way that makes sense, and kind of big crescendo in the middle and then back down the other way, often echoing what came before, but coming down the other side. And James is more like a whirlpool, right? It's more like a whirlpool. When I was a teacher, one of the ways that we used to plan our teaching was to be almost like in a helter-skelter, a spiral. So that if I was teaching maths, for example, I might do fractions in September, but I'd dip back into it and then I'd do a whole bunch of other stuff and I'd go round in a circle. But as we went through, I'd dip back past fractions again to remind the kids that they got it again, but I'd add on a new layer, and then you'd go up a layer and you'd carry on spiraling round, teaching, you know, all the other things that you teach, which are boring because of maths, but you know, you get to, and then you do fractions again, and you every time you build on it. And James is a little bit like that. It's this book that is extraordinary and different. And I just thought this morning, it's a little bit like our service, kind of whirling round, touching things and coming back round, and we'll keep coming back to them. But back to what I planned to say. We're starting a new series called Life Hacks. And actually, before I go any further, one of the things that I need to do in my life is learn to speak slower. There, I did it. Right there. I speak too fast. And some of the reason I do that is that I have done it since I was born. I think my first words came out probably so fast no one heard them. And some of it is worse because I'm not very good at making eye contact when I'm speaking publicly. So this morning, guys, I am aiming to look at you. I am aiming to speak slowly. It goes against everything that is natural in me. So if you notice and go, she's speaking really fast again, can't hear her, please wave at me. I'm going to try and check in with some people. John, you're one of them, who I know, well, I can trust to tell me. So just watch out for me, can you? And I will endeavour to do better. But new series called Life Hacks, which is one of these new phrases around, you know, how to make your life simpler. And it's because James is this book that is full of wisdom, full of all kinds of different things. And I'm looking at something today. Consider it joy. And I'll come back to this in just a moment. But let's just start at the beginning, because it's a very good place to start. James chapter 1 begins like this. This letter is from James, a slave of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes scattered amongst the nations. Greetings. So, fairly straightforward start. James. But actually, let's have a bit of a think about who James actually is, because it matters that we know who he is, because his story in itself is worth a sermon. I won't do a whole sermon, I'll just do a couple of minutes. But James, the man, was Jesus' brother, which is extraordinary. And it's even more extraordinary because he just described himself, didn't he, as a slave of Jesus Christ, a slave of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's astonishing, because most younger brothers do not refer to their older siblings in this way. Mine certainly don't. I'm the eldest, and they don't give me anywhere near enough respect. But James the man did. But he didn't always. If you go back in the Bible to the Gospel of Mark that tells you some of the story of Jesus, then actually it tells you that Jesus' family came marching into this house one day where Jesus was. He'd been telling stories, he'd gathered his disciples, he'd been healing people. And one day, Mark 3:21 tells us that his family came in to try and take him away. They were convinced he was mad, convinced he was crazy, and they wanted to take him away before he embarrassed himself and them any further. But then we discover, if you jump on through the Bible a bit more to 1 Corinthians 15, that James went from this place of, oh my goodness, my embarrassing big brother, to meeting his brother after he knew that his brother had died. So James knew Jesus had died, and then he met him again. So he met the resurrected Jesus, and the Bible tells us it totally transformed him. And he went from an embarrassed younger brother to a sold-out follower of Jesus. So much so that he becomes one of the great leaders of Christianity of the time in Jerusalem. at sending letters to other churches like this one, sharing wisdom, teaching them about Jesus, telling them what it looks like to live your faith out in the real world. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary because it says something about the truth of who Jesus was. If his brother could be convinced, it's just astonishing. And James, not so long after he writes this letter, gets killed for saying that Jesus was the Son of God. And he never renounced it, not even in the face of death, which gives something of a big amount of evidence to say, actually, maybe Jesus really did rise from the dead. He convinced his brother, so much so that he was prepared to go to his death for that truth. So that's some of who James was. He sometimes gets described as James the Just, who's a very righteous man, or the James the Intercessor. He was a great prayer warrior, going out and praying for all kinds of different people. And because of that, also sometimes, apparently, James the Camel Knees. A lot of his praying was done on his knees. Obviously, what an insult. How rude. But James the book, then, is a little bit different. I've said again about these like spiraling themes that run through. But actually, you could describe it as Instagram wisdom. It's like these little pockets. Somebody gave that to me the other day. I can't remember who it was. It's like these little pockets, these little snapshots, proverbs, little snapshots of instead of whole books and whole tomes of information. It could be described as the book of just do it, because actually, James can also be described, I've heard it described as the bossiest book in the Bible, BBB for short. Because in 108 verses, there are 54 imperatives or commands. Do this, be that, don't do that, make sure it's like this. It's just one after the next. I'm really selling it to you, I can tell. But a really, really bossy book. But actually, right at the heart of it, what James is trying to achieve is to help his readers to get to the bottom of what does it mean to really follow Jesus? What does true religion look like? Because he was a Jew, and a lot of the people who would have read this would have had a Jewish upbringing, and they had 101 laws already, more than 101, a lot more. They had loads of laws. And he's saying, do you know what? There are some principles that we need to look at that don't get contained in our laws. So with that in mind, let's see what we're considering joy. And actually, that's even the amazing thing about when you did your gratitude things earlier. You beat me to it. I was waiting for all the lovely things you were going to tell me. And actually, the theme was peeking its head out already. So let's just get straight to the point. James chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So here's a lovely letter from James. Yeah? No. It makes us go, what? Consider it pure joy when I'm going through trials. What kind of wisdom is that? What kind of slap it on your face, here's a happy story, fake it till you make it kind of religion is this that you're talking about? This isn't the kind of thing that we want to hear. We want to hear, there, poor you, it's so horrible when we're going through our trials. We don't want somebody to be able to tell us, no, consider it pure joy, we're right in the middle of things. So, what actually is going on? There's very few of us who enjoy trials, apart from, I don't know if Vic Birdsall's here this morning, but I saw on Facebook the other day that she was very disappointed that her marathon got cancelled because of the weather. And someone said, oh, but the weather's horrible. She went, no, that would just have been a better challenge. Right? Vic chases the challenge. I do not. When it's raining in my world, I like to sit inside by the fire with a cup of tea or a glass of wine and a nice movie. It's much, much nicer. But what can we actually learn? What is James actually going on about? He's not some sadomasochistic guy chasing pain. He's got a real point that he wants to make in the middle of that. And the first thing I want to notice is this. He says, whenever you face trials, there's no ifs, there's no buts, it's when. And it matters that he says that because some of who he's writing to are Jewish people. And in Jewish tradition had become this belief that wasn't really biblical at all, that if you were facing trials, if your life wasn't going well, then somehow it was probably your fault. Probably you'd done something, or your mum and dad had, or your grandparents had. There's a whole book in the Old Testament, you know, centuries before James is writing, where a guy called Job goes through the worst things, and his mates, for chapter after chapter after chapter, basically just go, "What have you done, Job? It's got to be you. You must have done something." And it's just endless pages of his friends blaming him for all that has gone wrong. And even more recently, when Jesus was walking around with his disciples, he probably should have known better. He's walking with them, and he gets to this place, and there's a guy who's blind, and they discover he's been blind from birth. And his disciples, his friends go, "Oh, what did his parents do?" Because there's this assumption that nothing bad happens to good people. And James is kind of blowing that out of the water, and he goes, "Rubbish, this is life. Storms come, roofs blow off, things get broken, people hurt you, the pound crashes, your business blows up, your relationships fall apart, like stuff happens." Now, sometimes it's the consequences of our actions. You know, if I don't fix my roof and a wind comes, it's more likely to blow off. If I defraud my boss, I'm likely to lose my job. If I'm unkind to my husband, eventually he'll get cross with me. But he's very patient. You know, sometimes our trials are brought on ourselves. Like, that's just truth. But it doesn't mean that they always are. Sometimes stuff happens. And the stuff can be all sorts of things, can't it? And we all know, I know that in this room, there's 101 different things going on. And as the book goes on, James talks about a lot of those different things. Particularly, he looks at finances, he looks at justice, he looks at conflict, he looks at sickness, grief. It can be all manner of things. But here he keeps it quite broad, and he keeps it quite open. As he says, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it joy. There's no get out in this. It's about how do you find the joy in the center of all of this? What does that actually look like? We sang that song earlier, didn't we? And it said, "When my heart is overwhelmed, your love is my battle cry." Now, it's easy to read and to sing that out loud when everyone else is singing it with us and we're here and we're in the warm and it's all okay for a minute. But how do you do that when you're on your own? And it's loneliness that's overwhelming you, or it's pain that's overwhelming you. What does that mean? How does it actually work? So, I think some of the first things to remember is he says, consider it joy. Like, reconsider. If this is about your brain and your thought processes, it's how you choose to think about something. It's what you prayed earlier, Mark, that we get to choose how to respond to situations in our lives. Now, I am as guilty as the next person of sometimes thinking, "Well, I'm devastated. This thing has happened and it's taken control." Like, God's enabled us. That Lion of Judah, that power within us, enables us to turn the tables on that and go, actually, I choose my response to a situation. It doesn't mean I make it nice and I make it pleasant, but I choose to look at it differently. I choose to consider it differently. That's some of what James is saying. There was an amazing story that I might have shared before, but it's worth resharing, of a lady called Deborah Veal who rowed the Atlantic. And to begin with, she was meant to row it with her husband. But they made it a couple of hours, a day or so out. And he just got utterly overwhelmed by the sea. And he just couldn't do it. And he went back to land, but she decided to continue regardless. And she made it solo, which is not what she planned, across the Atlantic, rowing. Extraordinary feat of endurance. And at the end, she had, you know, multiple interviews in the media, and they said, "Gosh, what was it like?" She said, "Well, it was overwhelming sometimes. You know, the waves were as high as mountains. I got so lonely." You know, I bet she didn't say this out loud, but I bet she was wondering about how her relationship was going to be when she got home. You know, but there was a whole load of stuff, and they said, "Well, what enabled you to do it?" And she said, "I put a note above where I sat with my oars as I rowed hour in, hour out, that said, choose your attitude." And I have been challenged by that day after day after day. Choose your attitude. Consider it joy. This doesn't mean that things aren't painful. It doesn't mean we don't get sad. But it means that we look for something else that is going on in this situation that we can find joy. And James gives us some tips. Perseverance, which is not top of most of our Christmas wish lists, is it? Jesus, what I'd like this year is a bit of perseverance. And yet, actually, this turns out to be some of the blessing that we find in our trials. Perseverance. Perseverance, endurance, gritty determination, sticking with it. Actually, when we go through trials, this is an opportunity for us to discover what it means to push on through. And pushing on through is not popular in our culture nowadays. I was reading some articles about parenting recently. Now, when I was younger, people used to talk about helicopter parents. Now, helicopter parents kind of whiz in when their children's in trouble. The children are in trouble, and they kind of rescue them, and they lift them, they rope them out, and they go, oh, let's put you over here on safe ground, so that the child never actually really learns to deal with the tough stuff. And that used to be a thing, oh, don't be a helicopter parent, because otherwise your child never builds resilience. They never learn how to live with the stresses and the strains that life will bring them one day. But nowadays, they talk about snowplow parents, and snowplow parents are a whole nother level. So snowplow parents are like a snowplow, going ahead of their child, pushing all the snow, all the tough times out of the way, saying, my child will never have to face any of these things so long as I'm in charge. Which seems lovely, doesn't it? Seems like the loving thing to do, except that at some point those children will hit tough stuff and they won't know what to do with the snow when it comes and mum and dad aren't around to move it out of the way. They won't even recognize that it's normal. That's the thing. Perseverance isn't highly valued in our culture, really, anymore. Except for we do like it when people can row the Atlantic. That's cool. But you don't get to row the Atlantic if you haven't had to do something else tough first, because it will be overwhelming and it will be too much and you'll want a helicopter to come and rescue you. Perseverance matters. But actually, sitting underneath all of this is a realization that perseverance isn't the end game. Actually, we're not all here following Jesus to become perseverers. That's not the point. It's so that it leads to something else. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And when the Bible uses language like this, it's talking about becoming more and more like Jesus. More and more like him. Mature, complete, lacking nothing. Maybe lacking money, maybe lacking relationship, maybe lacking health, maybe lacking all sorts of things. And yet somehow lacking nothing. Because we know what it means to rest in God. We know what it means to find our purpose and our fulfillment in God. We know what that is. We've understood it. We've grasped it. And we have everything, even when we have nothing. It's this back to front, upside down, inside out, hard to get your head around stuff that really, really matters. It's the kind of stuff that you discover when you only really get to your wit's end. It's the kind of thing that those of you who know Colin Holmes have heard him talk about. I visited him nearly a year ago in hospital, and he was lying in his bed, they thought, in his last few weeks of life, with motor neurone disease, unable to really move very much, with his big Darth Vader mask enabling him to breathe because he could no longer breathe on his own. And his words to me were this. He said, I finally discovered what Paul, the great church leader from the Bible, meant when. He said, I've learned to be content in every situation. I was like, seriously? You can't move. You've lost everything. And yet he's lying there going, it's like Jesus saved the best till last. That's the other thing he said to me more recently. It's extraordinary. But Colin, like Paul and like James, has learned what it means to be able to consider it pure joy when many trials come your way. It's extraordinary. It's the kind of thing we need to chase after. We hear stories all the time about people who have based their lives on other things. And when those things disappear, they don't know who they are anymore. Their life has gone. Somebody famous took their life yesterday because everything that she knew was disappearing before her eyes because she didn't have something solid, something immovable, something like the Lion of Judah sitting at the core of her saying, you can never lose everything because you will always have me. We need to be able to consider it pure joy. I read a book a year or so ago. It was a couple of years ago. Actually, no, this is important. Paul said the same thing. We'll come back to that. I'm going to skip over it for now. But I read this book a couple of years ago when I felt like everything was pretty much coming to the end. Steve had collapsed and I didn't know what was going on with his health. He was having loads of tests. The girls had had multiple diagnoses that were frightening me. One of my friends had just died and left her little girl behind. There was so much going on in the world around me that I couldn't control and that made me feel like I was utterly at the end of my tether. And out of the blue, a friend I hadn't spoken to for 12 years messaged me, "How you doing?" And I utterly went, "Well, if you've asked," bloop, and it all came out. And he said, "What's your address?" So I told him. And through the post the next day came this little book written by a guy who'd had a very similar type, totally different situation, but who also had got to the end of his tether. And he said, he explains it a little bit like this. Christ leads us into the wilderness of suffering to engage us there. When he meets us in the wilderness, he is the manna, he is the water from a broken rock, but he is also the one who wants us to potently feel our lack so that we cling to him. Which is hard. But sometimes it's actually what it takes for us to really discover, like Colin, like this guy, what it means to rest in Jesus when there's nothing else. It's so easy to get so caught up, and the next part of James goes on to talk about this really as he talks to people who are rich and poor. And it goes on to talk about what does it actually, like it's so easy to get caught up in what you can do in your own strength. It's so easy. It's so easy to think you can just do this, and God seems quite nice and he can be part of my life, and I'll go to church on Sunday and I'll sing the songs, might even put my hands in the air. I'll pray, I'll let other people pray for me. And you go through life, and Jesus is a great guy. And you know it all, but it sometimes isn't until that last moment when you're on your knees, literally, that you go, "Oh, you're amazing. You're extraordinary. You're the God I always needed." And sometimes we need to get there. I had a friend who mentored me back when I was a single mum, and she was wonderful, and she had four kids, and one of them died of a genetic, like hereditary disorder. And another of her children had also inherited from his parents haemophilia. So haemophilia, this disease that is, you know, there's some treatment, but it's dangerous. At any point, his life could have got taken. And I can't remember what we were talking about. It was probably me moaning about something. It was probably very linked to this. "Oh, you know, my life's so hard. I'm a single mum. I haven't got enough money. Blah, blah, blah." So that was probably where I was at. And she said, "Do you know what, Becca? Maybe it's time for you to thank God for those things." And I genuinely went, "What?" And she said, "Do you know what?" And they'd been to a big Christian conference recently. And she said, "Jonathan," who was the boy with haemophilia, she said, "Jonathan was at the youth event and he went and he got prayer for healing. And he's done that before and he never gets healed." She said, "And we realized that maybe we needed to look at it differently." So this is Jonathan's mum, who's already lost one child and has another child, you know, who's got a really horrible illness that isn't going to go away unless God does something. She said, "Maybe we need to thank God for your haemophilia, Jonathan." And he said, "Why?" And she said, "Do you know what? You're really clever." He is. Like nowadays, he's a consultant, you know, in a hospital somewhere doing something. He's very clever, quite capable. "You're really handsome." He is. All the girls fancied him. You know, she said, "You're clever, you're bright, you come from a good family, you'll do well. The risk for you actually is you forgetting that you need Jesus in your life." She said, "But your haemophilia makes you every day totally dependent on God to get through to the next day." And I just sat and I thought, I know how devastated you still are about losing one of your children. And I know how much guilt actually she carried as a mum for passing this disease on to her son. So to be able to turn around and say, "Actually, let's thank God for it," was extraordinary. And yet sometimes actually I think that's where the joy is. Sometimes that's where we find the blessing. And it doesn't mean we go chasing trials and it doesn't mean we go chasing suffering, but it means that when it comes, we take a pause to let go of some of the other emotions that are swirling around our brain, which are perfectly valid and we're allowed to feel them. We need to feel them. We need to be able to express them. But to stop and to allow God to be the one who we potently feel the need for in the midst of it all. So I'm going to finish in just a moment and I'm going to pray. But on the ends of your rows on your seats, you should have, but I think some of them have gone walkie, so we've got spares. The stewards will help you. You've got some little post-it notes. And I know that at any point in this room, different people are struggling with different things. We've got pens that will come around as well if we need them, or if you haven't got one. But I wonder, actually, the band will come and they'll just play some music quietly for a while. But I wonder, actually, if we could just take time to reflect and to think about, what does this mean for me? It's so easy. One of the things about the book of James is it's almost saying, don't just listen, do it. Don't just hear it and go, oh, that sounds like good wisdom. Put it into action. So let's do that this morning. Let's take a moment to go, this thing in my life is tough, and yet, this thing in my life, I have no idea why God's allowing me to go through it, and yet, this thing, I just want it to go away, but whilst it doesn't, I can thank God for this. Let's just take a moment to stop and to write it down. And when we've done that, and as we worship afterwards, and Piero, I know, is going to lead us in some songs that help us to continue thinking this stuff through. As we continue to think this stuff through, maybe it'll feel right to bring your post-it note and to put it on the cross. Because the next part of James actually goes on to say, if you can't understand, it's good to pray. Now, we're going to have a whole week of praying, and we're going to have a prayer team at the back to pray with people who actually go, do you know what, this is too much. I can't find the blessing. I can't find the joy. It's just too much. And if you actually could just do with somebody to pray with you and help you to find the wisdom and the good and the God in the middle of it all, then do that. But let's just take a moment, write it down. And let's just take this next 10, 15 minutes to allow God to bring the joy into the trials as well. Jesus, we come to you as people who sometimes want to ask why, and why me, and how come, and what's going on, and where are you? But actually this morning we just stop for a moment and go, God, can you help us? Help us to understand. Help us to control our responses instead of letting the situation around us control our responses. Help us to recognize that you've given us that freedom and to seize it and to grab it. Help us to see where you're giving us, you're allowing us to go through situations that will shape us and hone us and bring us out to look a little bit more like you. Help us to see where we're pushing against things so that we can grow our faith muscle, so that we can grow our patience, so that we can grow our kindness, we can grow our selflessness. Help us to see where you're at work in our lives. Help us to see where we need to lean on you more, hold on to you more, recognize that you are our riches. And in the midst of it all, we say thank you. Thank you for being a God who as sent his son, as a human came and experienced everything we walk through, who experienced poverty, who experienced loneliness, who experienced pain, who experienced betrayal, who experienced grief, who experienced it all, so that when we sit in our dark places, you sit with us and say, I know, but I'm here and I'm with you and I'll hold you and I'll carry you.